Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Wednesday, February 11, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira.
Here are our top stories this evening.
Reserve Bank Governor John Mangujga effects a salary increase freeze, saying the country's economic outlook remains gloomy to support wage hikes.
This is not the first time that government officials react to challenges without applying their minds on the root causes they want to address.
Governor Mangujga also says Harare is putting in place plans to recover some of the hundreds of millions of dollars that were externalized by some top Zimbabwean politicians and business people through the HSBC Bank.
This is money that cannot really be recovered. If we were talking about recovery, we're really talking about maybe a recovery rate of, at the most, maybe 20-30% of the funds.
And the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights launches public dialogue meetings to discuss the protection and promotion of human rights in the country.
Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe Governor John Mangujga has today announced a salary increase freeze, saying the country's economic outlook remains gloomy to support wage hikes, raising the ire of trade unions that are complaining that most workers in the country are earning peanuts. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
In his monetary policy statement for 2015 released today, Central Bank Governor John Mangujga announced that the country's economy remains too depressed to the point that it won't make sense for employers, the government included, to effect any salary adjustments for hard-pressed workers. He said given the lack of competitiveness and its negative effects on the economy, there was no room for wage and salary increases within the national economy. Instead, Mangujga said the prevailing circumstances call for a downward adjustment in the prices of goods and services in order to promote competitiveness and ultimately for the recovery of the economy. The RBZ chief said further wage and salary increases would only serve to choke the economy. But the central bank governor's announcement has provoked the ire of trade unionists who want an upward review of their salaries. Japhet Moyo, General Secretary of the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, tells Studio 7 that his organization is unhappy that government makes critical decisions without consulting its key stakeholders.
This is not the first time that government officials react to challenges without applying their minds on the root causes they want to address. That's the first thing. In this instance, a casual look on the statement, one who assumes that the problems are salaries, which is far from it. Look at the salaries in the region, Botswana, South Africa, Zambia, Mozambique, and they look at the cost of living. Otherwise, the cost of living, a bar of soap, is three times more in Zimbabwe than in South Africa. If one looks at the surveys done by the employers as to what are the challenges of business. Nowhere do they mention labor, nowhere do they mention salaries.
Moyo said workers will soon be engaging government for an upward review of workers' salaries under the auspices of the tripartite negotiating forum, although he did not rule out protests.
We have already protested to government. In fact, we have also the meeting with government next week to discuss, among other things, those reactions from government. That the governor is well known to own a certain clothing company. Was he speaking as a quasi-government official? Was he speaking as an employer who does not want to pay his workers? So basically what he's doing is putting the safe in the public domain, is answering to what government says actually problem, which we are saying not the wages, as to whether workers are going to protest up to the extent of going to the streets. That has to be seen as we move forward. But we've put the facts that our government is wrong.
The move by the central bank to freeze salary increases comes at a time when the tripartite negotiating forum comprising government, business and labor is set to begin consultations on salaries. Studio 7 failed to get a comment from Labor Minister Priska Mfumira. The central bank chief said Zimbabwe's economy is projected to further grow by 3.2% in 2015, driven mainly by services, mining and manufacturing sectors. Investments in various infrastructural projects already being implemented in electricity, transport and housing under the country's economic blueprint, the Zimbabwe Agenda for Sustainable Socioeconomic Transformation, are expected to provide the additional growth impetus. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Meanwhile, in his monetary policy statement today, the Reserve Bank governor also said he was worried by this week's revelations that an international banking giant, the HSBC, made huge profits by engaging in shady deals of over $270 million with some Zimbabwean citizens 7 years ago, in the process disadvantaging the poor Southern African nation of the much-needed foreign currency. Ivan Chifera reports.
The RBZ chief said the country has put in place measures to recover some of the money. Mangudla said exchange control authorities had instituted various measures to recover the funds that may have been externalized by some of the rich and famous in Zimbabwe. The measures, he said, include an amnesty to all those who violated the country's exchange control regulations prior to 2010. Mangudla said of the 108 million externalized monies that the bank had ruled out as irrecoverable last year, 68 million has been repatriated to the country. The central bank, he said, would continue engaging those individuals and companies concerned with a view to recover all that is due to the country. He said they were checking on the HSBC case, but said it would be difficult at the moment to say whether the funds were externalized or free funds. Mangudla said the practice of promoting illicit financial flows is counterproductive and must be stopped. Mangudla said he was worried that Zimbabwe was prejudiced of hundreds of millions of dollars through illicit deals with the HSBC as they tried to evade tax and hide their assets. Secret HSBC documents obtained from the French newspaper Le Monde by the renowned International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, ICIJ, a Washington-based journalist organization with members from more than 65 countries, including Zimbabwe, cover bank accounts up to 2007, said to have allegedly belonged to 198 clients connected to Zimbabwe by birth or residence, amounting to $272 million. The account records also show that HSBC in 2006 to 2007 had accounts holding about $102 billion deposited by individuals and companies from 203 nations, Zimbabwe included. Mangudla did not say what action Zimbabwe would take to recover the unpaid taxes from the politicians, business people, and white farmers. Meanwhile, some economists have expressed worry that the millions of dollars externalized by the Zimbabweans may not be recovered. Former Treasury Chief Economist Masimba Manyanya said most of these funds may not be recovered as most of the people involved are highly connected.
In my own estimation, this is money that cannot really be recovered. If we are talking about recovery, we are really talking about maybe a recovery rate of, at the most, maybe 20-30% of the funds of the 270 million. And in fact, that could even be an overestimation. We don't have the checks and balances that are necessary to keep a sound macroeconomic, start off with a monetary policy framework.
He said, given that the figure of externalized funds were only from one financial institution, the country could have lost billions of dollars over the same period. Independent economist James Joa tells Studio 7 that most of the externalization took place during the time when Zimbabwe was in a crisis and the exchange control authorities were not doing their job properly. Joa concurs with Manyanya that recovering the funds could prove difficult, if not impossible.
That could be difficult because it depends with the rules governing the financial institution involved, the bank that is involved, and also the issues of bank-client confidentiality that are involved.
Externalization also occurred in the country when exporters did not bring back export proceeds, unauthorized external loans, unauthorized cross-border investments, and non-repatriation of investments incomes, among other ways. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
The ruling ZANU-PF Party's Politburo is meeting today at the party's headquarters in Harare to discuss preparations for President Robert Mugabe's multi-million dollar birthday bash in Victoria Falls, the state of the economy, and the government's economic revival plan, Zima said. Mr. Mugabe's bash, which as usual continues to divide the nation, will be held in the resort town of Victoria Falls. Efforts to get a comment from ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo were futile, as he was said to be still holed up in the meeting. Director of the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, Pedzisai Ruhanya, tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that putting Mr. Mugabe's birthday on the agenda shows the party is not serious about addressing issues affecting ordinary Zimbabweans.
I think it tells you that we are being run by a rudderless political leadership, a clueless political party that does not understand the priorities of this country. This country has a serious democratic deficit. This country has a comatose economy. The political economy of the state is rotten. And what should preoccupy any responsible, accountable government is to restore the macroeconomic fundamentals of the country, to make sure that our institutions are working, to make sure that the industry is working, to make sure that there's domestic and foreign investment, to make sure that there is production in the industry. Companies are working because we have 84% unemployment. And you have a ruling party that sits down to discuss a birthday of a leader. You can see that they don't have a clue on how to address the political economy of the state, which is comatose.
Talking about the economy, there are reports in today's Herald that are saying that Chinese companies are actually inflating their prices when they deal with the government. Are you surprised by this?
I'm not surprised that the Chinese are corrupt. The Chinese are benefiting from our resources, and you are getting nothing out of their that they are providing.
That was Director of the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, Pedzisai Ruhanya, speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Harare.
Meanwhile, youths from various opposition parties say they are not heeding the call by their ZANU-PF counterparts to participate in the annual commemorations of President Mugabe's 91st birthday to be held in the resort town of Victoria Falls because they believe the event is a waste of resources. The Renewal Team youths and MDCT youths have distanced themselves from the occasion. Decent Bajila, Secretary General for the Welsh Mengube-led MDC, explains to reporter Standikile Mthlanga why his party does not acknowledge the celebrations.
We believe that the president is a family man. It is a preserve of his family to celebrate his birthday with him. A birthday by nature is a family event where someone gets to meet their family and they have family time. So we do not believe that everyone in the nation has to be forced to attend a family function. Secondly, the issues around participating in a cleanup campaign, Victoria Falls, if anyone wants to do a cleanup campaign, they need to do it on a daily basis. They need to do it without any form of occasion. There is no need to do it simply because it's the president's birthday. Clearly, these things consume a lot in terms of his fiscal and in terms of the quantity of resources that could be channeled towards other developmental issues.
ZANU-PF says most of the resources used in the celebrations are donations from well-wishers.
Well, I do not see anyone donating anything towards the transporting police, the fuel that goes there, the repair, the key and wear, of the cars that transport police and other people from the Department of State. It is CIO resources, which are state resources, public resources. It is ZNA resources. Even the others, the councils, like the municipalities, the local authorities, that where this thing is hosted, it is their resources that get to be channeled towards hosting this event. Young people of Zimbabwe should check this opportunity around the president's birthday to say, President Mugabe, you have been there, we have seen you, we have been with you, there's nothing more we expect from you. We know this is now beyond your capacity. All you can do is to go home and rest. This is the best birthday present we can do to President Mugabe.
That was Disen Bajila, the Secretary General for the Washman Ngube-led MDC Youth, on the line with Sitandekile Mhlanga.
Direct from Washington. The Voice of America,
VOA. Now we take a look at regional and international news.
At least 200 people died and 100 others were missing after trying to cross the Mediterranean Sea in inflatable boats, the United Nations Refugee Agency said today. A group of four boats carrying mainly migrants and refugees from sub-Saharan Africa left Libya on Saturday, attempting to reach Italy. Three of the boats have been unaccounted for so far.
The Chadian military says its troops repelled an attack by Boko Haram militants in a Nigerian border town today. Military sources say Boko Haram attacked Chadian positions before dawn in Gambaru, a town on Nigeria's northeastern border with Cameroon.
And deadly fighting continued today in eastern Ukraine as the leaders of Ukraine, Russia, France and Germany prepared to hold a summit on the conflict that has killed more than 5,300 people since last April.
As the debate on traffic spot fines rages on, human rights defenders are doubling down on their support for a High Court judge's take on the spot fines amid aggressive pushback by police dismissing Justice Francis Bere's expression as personal views and not legally binding. In a strongly worded statement, police spokesman Paul Nyati said, Bere's statement is not binding on police operations. We encourage the public to continue cooperating with the police on all activities to ensure the smooth delivery of justice, end quote. Bere got the nation talking on Monday during an official opening of the High Court when he said there's no law which compels a motorist to deposit a fine with the police if he desires to challenge the alleged offense. Human rights lawyer Arnold Tsunga tells Ntungameli Nkomo he agrees with Justice Bere.
Generally, I agree with the judge because for any matter where you are going to impose a fine, if there is a dispute by the person against whom you want to impose a fine, then the matter has to be properly tried before a decision can be made based on evidence. So in this case, if the police then use their good to impound a vehicle in order to force someone who is disputing the imposition of a fine, then that amounts to a breach of the rules of natural justice. In other words, you cannot be a policeman, a prosecutor, and a judge in your own case.
Police are pushing back, saying that the pronouncement by the judge, it really doesn't mean anything because it wasn't made in court. What do you make of that?
I think that the pronouncement was not made in a case. That is true. And to that extent, it may be true that therefore the police are not yet bound by the judge's pronouncement. But when it comes to whether the police conduct is lawful or not, then that's another issue. The lawfulness or others of the police is judged on a case-by-case basis. So if the police want to impose a fine because of what they perceive to be a crime or a wrong that has been committed by a person, if the person is voluntarily agreeing to pay the fine with informed consent, then in that situation, no major issues arise. But in an environment where a motorist is disputing what the police are alleging and for which they are wanting to charge a fine, then in that case, it cannot be correct for the police to then use the method of impounding a vehicle in order to force a payment.
That was human rights lawyer Arnold Tsunga on the line with Studio 7's Ntunga Milinkomo from Mutare.
The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights today launched a public dialogue meetings in Chitungwiza, where it is working with the Chitungwiza Residents Trust on the protection and promotion of human rights in Zimbabwe. The same program was also launched in Bulawayo.
ZLHR spokesman Kumbirai Mafunda says the organization also used this opportunity to distribute simplified constitutional fact sheets in three languages, English, Shona, and Sindebele. These community dialogues were focusing on the rights to water, food, education, shelter, and citizenship, the right to freedom of association, and the right to freedom of expression and the media. Mafunda Elias on spoke with reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
We were indeed in Sweke in Chitungwiza, one of the identity suburbs where we launched our community dialogue or our public dialogues with the community, focusing mainly on the new progressive provisions in the constitution, particularly the Bill of Rights. We are trying to build the capacity of citizens through rights literacy. That's the program that we started today. So we feel that these unique public dialogues focusing on the right to water, the right to health, the right to education, the right to food, including right to shelter and citizenship, together with the freedom of association, freedom of expression of the media. We believe that this will increase awareness on key rights which are provided for in the new constitution.
What do you seek to achieve through these public meetings?
We intend to enhance the capacity of Zimbabweans or even HRDs to incorporate these principles of human rights and the rule of law in their advocates' work. We also feel that information is power. We are trying to contribute to an empowered citizenry which appreciates and understands the rights of people. We think that we can conscientize Zimbabweans and improve their rights literacy.
How was this received by the people you met today?
We encountered the engaging community in Sweke. We were so impressed by their contributions, their inquiries which they brought to us. It was quite encouraging that people, to a certain extent, appreciate their rights, but we are happy that we hope that by this contribution, people can be able to affect their rights. That's what we simply just want the people of Zimbabwe to do.
And that was Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights spokesman Kumbirai Mafunda in Harare with Studio 7 reporter Jonga Kandemiri.
Kids Can, a cancer organization working to increase the survival rate of Zimbabwean children living with cancer, is gearing up for its annual Orange Week to raise awareness about cancers affecting children. The Orange Week, which kicks off on Sunday, is also known as International Childhood Cancer Day. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Kids Can Executive Director Bev Sebastian, who explains the Orange Week campaign and the challenges children with cancer face in the country.
And we're running campaigns at the moment around early detection. We are saying to the population of Zimbabwe, support children with cancer and talk about it. And the ways that we ask is, one, wear orange. That's the color, Orange Week. Any day during that week, talk about cancer. And we also ask, you know, the Zimbabwean population to support children who are living with cancer. Kids Can is the only one responding by donating $1 via EcoCash, billet code 51599, or having more discussion within schools, etc. A lot of schools take part in this. This year we've got in Zimbabwe Bon Marché stores taking place, South African Airways has donated a ticket, which is up for grabs during that week. So we really, through these kind of initiatives, are really trying to create a lot of awareness.
What's your message to those Zimbabweans out there? But then also in terms of those young children that you see day to day that you're working with?
Get help. Early detection is so important. Another important thing I'd like to mention is we do find cases of stigma and discrimination. We've had an instance, for example, when a child who had just finished his chemotherapy was getting onto a taxi omnibus in Zimbabwe with his mum. And because the child had an unsightly tumour, he wasn't allowed access onto the taxi. And, you know, we have other cases of stigma and discrimination among children with cancer. And it doesn't have to be that way. These are gorgeous children. They deserve the right to the fight. And we as Zimbabweans should be rallying around these children, rallying around these families to really support them.
That was KidsCan Executive Director Bev Sebastian speaking in Harare with Tatenda Gumbo. And now, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The nature of the terrorist threat has evolved over the course of the past several years. While the threat posed by Al-Qaeda with its centralized, hierarchical terrorist command structure has now diminished, largely as a result of leadership losses suffered by the AQ Corps, other violent extremist groups have emerged. Groups that have become active in places like Yemen, Syria, Libya, Iraq, and Somalia are mainly localized, but some pose a threat to Western interests in Europe and the United States, and we take these security concerns very seriously. Lately, the most visible manifestation of terrorism in the West has come in the context of so-called lone wolf offender attacks, as we saw in the case of the terrorist assassinations at the Paris publication Charlie Hebdo. Only by working together can the international community successfully counter groups like these, said Tina Cadenow, U.S. Ambassador-at-Large and Coordinator for Counterterrorism. Take ISIL, for example. We have worked to build an effective anti-ISIL coalition, a coalition that is clearly crucial because the fight against ISIL is not one the U.S. can or should pursue alone. More than 60 partners are contributing to this effort, which is multifaceted in its goals, not only to stop ISIL's advance on the ground, but to combat the flow of foreign fighters, disrupt ISIL's financial resources, and counteract ISIL's messaging and undermine its appeal, said Ambassador Cadenow. The United States believes a successful approach to counterterrorism must revolve around partnerships. Effective partnering means identifying governmental, non-governmental, and multilateral actors overseas that can make a difference in this battle against the most salient terrorist threats facing the international community. Partners come with various capabilities and varying amounts of political will. So cultivating them is not just a matter of diplomatic engagement, but also means working with them to develop the technical and practical skills needed to counter terrorism within their borders and beyond. The threats we confront are serious and far-reaching, and it will take considerable time and effort to develop the partnerships and institutional components we need to address them, said Ambassador Cadenow. Nevertheless, we believe this is the most effective and sustainable approach to a complex and enduring challenge.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And in sports news, the Zimbabwe cricket team today beat Sri Lanka in one of its warm-up matches ahead of the Cricket World Cup starting this weekend in New Zealand and Australia. Let's hear more from commentator Muzwetu Hadebe speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Mhlanganyahuye.
Obviously, many people did not expect them to be achieving what they've achieved, but I think they will be telling themselves that these are just warm-up games. They need to take that form into the competitive side when the tournament finally gets underway. It could be some motivation coming in with the new coach at times. Such things do motivate and change teams. We certainly hope it's something along those lines. But to do well against the likes of New Zealand, also to try and hold their own against Sri Lanka, is something which was good. And we hope that the team can always build from this.
What would you think is the driving force behind Zimbabwe performing so well at the World Cup?
Well, I think it depends. Obviously, there is a new coach. And when you get someone new at times, you tend to be a little bit motivated. You want to impress the new coach. But also going to the World Cup is always a rare opportunity for most of these young stars. And I think they would want to shine. They know that if they go out there, perform very well, who knows, they might be getting contracts even outside Zimbabwe, which are much better than what they are currently getting here in Zim. So those could be contributing factors to the fine start in terms of the warm-up matches by the Chevrons. But also we need to put into mind that the leadership has brought in new ideas. They are trying to bring in new people, are trying as well to attract the corporate world to go back into cricket. The youngsters want to be a part of that new developmental strategy.
That was sports commentator Muziwetu Hadebe. And now for a quick recap of today's top story.
RBZ Governor John Mangujga says Zimbabwe will try to recover some of the money externalized by top business people.
That's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira. Please remember to stay tuned for...